Hello and welcome to Soundcheck, a new program about issues, ideas, and people from Raven Radio, KCAW, and Sitka. You can listen to Soundcheck online at our website, kcaw.org, or download Soundcheck as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm your host, Robert Woolsey. Ron Rao has been trolling in Southeast Alaska for 35 years. He started in a 16-foot skiff near Wrangell when literally anyone could become a hand troller for the price of a $50 permit. Over the course of his fishing career, Rao often published articles in the Alaska Fisherman's Journal. He's now collected those essays in a new book called As the Gertie Turns. When I first saw this book lying on my desk, I thought, Ron has gone and written a book, but you wrote this book already. This is a collection of your articles for fishing journals.
That's true. I did. Started 30 years ago. But all last summer, I was taking it from the yellow tear sheet pages of the Alaska Fisherman's Journal and putting it into cyberspace. 30 of these chapters came from good old Alaska Fisherman's Journal, which was alive from 1977 until 2004, and this book wouldn't even be here were it not for the publisher John Pappenheimer, who let his writers gave us quite a bit of leeway. He just had to relate it to commercial fishing a little bit, so I owe this book to him.
Leeway seems like an understatement.
Well, I think if you look closely, there's a sentence or two in each chapter that brings it back to commercial fishing, and some of them are totally about commercial fishing, the prices we got in the old days and the Derby Wars. And
the stories in this book called As the Gertie Turns, and we'll talk about what a gertie is in just a minute. I picked up the book and I immediately found
typos?
No. Enjoyable prose.
Oh, well, thank you.
And, I've known you for a long time, mainly through your interest in adult baseball here in Sitka. I had no idea that you had been a contributing writer to Alaska Fisherman's Journal. And
you
other
do remember Alaska Fisherman's?
Yes.
I called it the Rolling Stones of commercial fishing publications.
Sure, but other magazines as well, Sports Illustrated, and you were putting out a lot of freelance writing. You must have been writing in the off season when you weren't fishing.
That's it. And when I lived in Fairbanks, I worked out at Labor's Local 942, which gave me the winters off, and I wrote a lot when I lived in Fairbanks from 67 till 77.
And when you are writing, my feeling is that you're trying to share your stories with as wide an audience as possible. It's not just other guys in the fleet who you're writing for.
Exactly. I kind of have a theory on that. I grew up in Flint, Michigan as a flatlander, and I never saw my first mountain or my first ocean until I was 18 years old. A friend and I came up to Alaska in my Volkswagen Bug, and that's where I saw my first mountains on the way. And then I had a job at McKinley Park for the summer, changing tires in the gas station. And after the season was over, we drove down to Homer, and I saw my first ocean. A lot of my writing is a learning experience I went through that I want to share. And when I write, I try to write to somebody that's a little smarter than me.
The idea being that the lessons I've learned are ones that you should probably not be repeating.
There are lots of those, yeah, but the lessons I've learned are some I'd like to share with you, about new country and new lifestyles. And one of the things that impressed me when I came up to Alaska was the diversity of people, which you don't really have in Michigan. You either work for General Motors or you're one of them.
Your original title for this book was called Fishing for Dollars.
Right.
You eventually settled on As the Gertie Turns.
Yes.
Tell us about why you landed on As the Gertie Turns.
Well, I had an excellent, excellent proofreader for this book. His name is Dave Ritchie. He's a troller now. And I first hired him in 1991 on a recommendation of friends from Michigan. He was chartering on the Great Lakes. He wanted to come up to Alaska. And he fished with me one summer. Then he got a job with a magazine in Michigan and bought stories from me. And then we closed that one down, it folded, and he moved out to Kansas City, got a job with Fishing World, bought stories from me, and we closed that one down, it folded. So he's a bona fide editor, and he went over my original draft of this that I thought was pretty good. And it took him 3 or 4 days, and I was astounded at the pencil marks he made on there, and he did not like the title, Fishing for Dollars. And I said, well, okay, come up for a better one. We'll come up with a better one. And he came up with that, and I immediately liked it because throughout some of these stories, I mentioned people getting caught in the gurdy, you know, and so that's how it got changed.
And not just people getting caught in the gurdy.
And that's right. That's right.
You have some animal stories as well. And the gurdy is, how would you describe it? It's the device that you use to get your...
Yeah, the gurdy is the hydraulic reel on our trolling boats. It's powered by a 9-horsepower motor, hydraulic motor, and you better keep your fingers out of where the wire rolls onto the gurdy, and your hair, too. I've heard of a female deckhand getting her hair caught in there and getting mm-hmm. pulled down into the gurdy. So that's basically what a gurdy is. If you get caught in a gurdy in troller lingo, you know, you're the subject of gossip, you know, which usually has to do with divorces and male-female relationships, or else you're dead. I much prefer the former.
But when you start out as a hand troller, you don't have the power gurdy.
Right, right. It's a lot safer, okay. Unless you get hung up on the bottom. I almost scraped all the meat off my pitching hand once. I was caught on the bottom, and, you know, no troller likes to lose gear. So I was back there dealing with a problem, and the wire was way out, you know, 50 yards from the boat, and I was going to start cranking it in, and it had a loop in it. Well, you don't want to get a kink in your wire, so I went to, it was kind of rough out. I went to straighten out that loop, and I thought, what's my hand doing in here, my pitching hand? And I pulled it back, and immediately went like that. And if my hand had been in there still, I probably would have lost all the meat on my hand because the cannonball was anchored to the bottom, and I was on the boat.
And you would have had to learn how to pitch left-handed.
Can't even pick my nose left-handed.
I'm going to ask you about some of the things I read in the book. The GPS has killed more fish than women.
Okay. My fishing career divides into 15 years before GPS and 15 in the present day. And in the old days, you know, GPS these days gets you right back where the fish are, and it's a very handy tool to have, especially for trollers. Get you back to the cookie jar. And in the old days, the biggest inspiration for the fish killers, I call them, of Alaska were women. It was either, honey, I'm going to go catch us a whole lot of fish so we could go to Mexico, or dump me, will she? I'll show the blank blank. And then you go out and kill a lot of fish. Either way.
Okay, so it's not women fishermen.
It's inspiration. yeah.
Women,
motivation.
Motivation.
Would be a better word.
And GPS, of course, is a global positioning system.
Yes.
And
yes. It takes all the stress out of being near rocks out there.
It really has changed the dynamic of fishing, and I guess guys now have laptops and autopilots that are connected to their GPS.
Guys have cell phones connected to their GPS.
Yeah,
yes.
So you can pilot your boat on the exact same drag that you've fished before.
Yep, and in the old days, you knew there was a rock in the area, but you didn't know quite where you were. Now you know where you are. Mm-hmm. In relation to the rock. It takes the stress out.
Phrase number two, Ron. I am a dog, as Flannery O'Connor would say.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
What does that mean?
Well, Flannery O'Connor happens to be just about my favorite American writer. She died at age 39 of lupus she had. But she left us some literature. And that refers to one of my favorite stories, briefly, a grandfather who was raising a grandson out in the wilds of Mississippi is going to take his son to town and show him how well off he is out in the wilds. So they walk out to the railroad tracks, and the train stops for them, which it did in those days, probably wouldn't now. They get on, and the boy sees his first Negro and reacts to it. And the people around are looking, what's going on here? And Grandpa explains to him, well, it's his first Negro. So Grandpa's going to show the boy the town. And, of course, Grandpa gets lost in town, and the boy saves him. He gets him back to the train station. It's a good story.
Well, literary references are not out of the question here. And as you mentioned, the troll fleet tends to be typically educated group of fishermen.
Yes. When I first got in here, I was surprised how many college degrees were in this fishery.
And people who, because of the price of a hand troll permit back when you got into it in the late 70s, was something that teachers, doctors, lawyers could get into as kind of a sideline.
Actually, anybody, even a non-resident, could get into it for $50. You could you paid $50 for a year's use of a hand troll permit, and 3 years after that, it went limited entry hand trolls.
Ron, I have a third and final phrase for you. Again, this is out of your book. I love you more than a white king salmon.
Yes, what a lovely statement. I'm adopted into an Indian family here. I'm more than adopted. I'm part of it. And the patriarch, Buzz Bradley, that was his favorite saying. I love you more than a white king salmon. And it is on his tombstone over there at the National Cemetery. You go over and look at it, maybe.
It's one of these contradictions, or at least I see it that way, because for a while, white king salmon were undervalued.
Oh, forever. They still are.
And you could tell somebody, I love you more than a white king salmon, and that means that I love you more than a fish that they don't pay me enough for. Or the flip side is white salmon extremely valued by people who appreciate sort of the culinary distinction of that
fish. Yes. We know about our white kings. For 1 year, it was worth more than reds. 1 year only. I wrote about that in a chapter called Ode to the White King.
Is that when Buzz developed the phrase?
No. He grew up in Marengo. He's the home of the White King salmon. The Stikine River produces a lot of whites for some reason. And he's been using that all his life.
Ron, what do you write now? When you write, what do you write about?
I look back at it, and mostly what I write are memoirs of trips, and hunting trips and fishing trips and outdoor trips. I consider myself sort of a nature writer with a shotgun and a fishing pole. And I got one more big book to put together before I start writing fresh stuff. This will be the big fat hunting and fishing book, all the stories that didn't fit into the other two.
And what's the baseball book?
That's History of the One-Fingered Fastball. It's a pitch that no baseball person has ever heard of. I developed it in the old Etland Street Gymnasium one winter when I saw that the kids were waiting on my fastball. We had a fisherman's team that played a lot of kids here in town before they had a high school team, so we gave them some competition. And they're not supposed to wait on a fastball. They're supposed to wait on a curve because it comes in slower. But they're waiting on my fastball, so I had to speed it up a little, and I started throwing it one finger, and I can throw it a little faster that way because there's only one finger of friction to slow the ball down as opposed to two on a regular fastball. So I still throw it.
And the book is sort of stories from those from that era before high school baseball in Sitka?
And before television.
Right.
It starts out in Flint, Michigan in Little League, and before we even had TV, and there was plenty of time for baseball then.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how you feel about trolling and hunting and fishing in general. Is the lifestyle that you embraced when you moved to Southeast Alaska in the 70s, and is that changed, do you think?
Oh, well, everything has. It would be the same for anybody coming from a flatland like me, coming up here and seeing what we do here and getting into it. I mean, the excitement and uniqueness of this lifestyle would be the same for them. But Over the years, yes, we've seen lots of changes. Not so much in price. We still get roughly the same price we got in the late 70s when I got into fishing. But I think there's a lot better fishermen around than there used to, a lot more better fishermen around than there used to be. And GPS might be partly responsible for that. Of course, we like to think we get smarter as the years go by, too.
Are they a different sort of animal, though? I mean, you fished out of a 16-foot Lund. You camped on the beach.
My very first year, yes, coming down from Fairbanks. My first summer, yes.
Yeah, and in those days, there was no GPS. I mean, is the experience different now? Do you see people who are in the fishery who just don't seem as connected to that kind of seat of your pants sort of approach?
No, you know, it's hard to keep doing this year after year after year if you're not connected. There are many days out there when I think, you know, when everything's going well and you're catching fish, and I think, you know, there's nowhere I'd rather be and nothing I'd rather be doing. And then there are days out there where you say, what am I doing here? You know, when things are going wrong and the wind's blowing. And that's a hard question to answer because I have changed over the years too, you know.
As the Gertie Turns is going to be available in bookstores, or how can people get the book?
You know, it's self-publication, which is a whole lot like trolling. You almost go broke, but you might make a little money. I'm going to be at Harbor Books Saturday from 3 to 5 for my first book signing ever.
Okay.
It's right before the Christmas parade, I understand. So
All right.
There might be a lot of people in town. Just today I mailed out 10 requests with a photo of the book on it to 10 different bookstores in Alaska asking, do they think they could sell this book? And it's if I do say so myself, and I didn't have that much to do with the cover, though. Pat Kehoe did a wonderful watercolor of me holding my biggest king, which I caught way back in 1978. Haven't caught one that big since. And the printer picked out the perfect color for the book. I'm really happy with the cover. Yeah,
it's a handsome book.
It is. When I first saw it, I thought, yeah, that's what I had in mind and more.
Ron Rao, thanks very much for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you, Rob. I've enjoyed this. We do this once every 10 years, don't we?
Sounds fine. Ron Rao is the author of As the Gertie Turns, a collection of his essays from Alaska Fisherman's Journal and some other publications, and it's available at Old Harbor Books. Soundcheck is a new program about issues, ideas, and people from Raven Radio, KCAW, and Sitka, which we are testing in this time slot. If you'd like to listen to or comment on the program, visit Soundcheck at our website, kcaw.org. You can also download Soundcheck as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm Robert Woolsey. Thanks for listening in on Soundcheck.